Longevity is hard to come by in the fast-shifting entertainment industry, but the actor Sam Elliott has carved out a career and a filmography over the last 50 years that suggests he's every bit as tough and tenacious as many of the characters he plays on screen. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is easily recognizable to generations of moviegoers for his rugged good looks and laconic performances, and for today's show, by his distinctive voice. Sam Elliott has appeared in more than 100 feature films and television shows and has family roots in the El Paso area. He was in town recently to support his latest film's U.S. premiere at the Plaza Classic Film Festival, and he dropped by the studio while he was in town. Sam Elliott, welcome to On Film.
Thank you, Charles. Good morning. Honored to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here in person in the studio, so welcome to El Paso.
Thank you.
Before we get started, we were just walking through the UTEP campus to get to the studio, and yeah. You mentioned your mother went to this college.
An emotional walk up the stairway when, as you mentioned, when we came in, it could very well have been a stairway my mom walked up, you know. She was one of nine children and the only one that went to college, and she was born and raised in El Paso, and I know that this college experience meant the world to her, as I often heard about it. She was very proud of her days here at UTEP, and she came back for a number of reunions over the years.
Fantastic, sir. Well, it's great to have you on the program, and you are in town when we're recording this to support the U.S. premiere of your latest film with a great title, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot. This was written and directed by first-time feature film director Robert Kraskowski.
Yes, sir.
When you receive a script like this, with a title like this, and start opening the pages, what is it that you find in that script that makes you think, I want to take a chance on this first-time director and this crazy story?
I think probably as to whether I can bring any truth to the material or not. You know, I mean, the title off the top, I mean, is pretty catchy.
Right. Million-dollar title.
A better way to put it. So my curiosity was piqued to learn a little bit about this character. But I just thought in the reading of it that this guy, Robert Kraskowski, is one of the best writers that I've ever read, and I've read a lot of scripts over the years, and this story about this man kind of caught in time and searching his soul from over his past and where he's come to and the journey that he's taken in life, I just was very intrigued by it. The letter came to me also with a letter from Robert and a letter from a director who was also one of the producers on the film, a man named John Sayles, who I've never worked with, never met John, but he certainly has the reputation of being a wonderful director. I've seen a number of his films, and between the script and those two letters, this was not something that I could pass up. You know, it was a great opportunity.
It's the kind of film, being someone who loves watching classic films and films from all generations, it's the kind of film that we don't see anymore. You know, my first reaction when I met Bob years ago and he told me about this crazy story, I thought, well, this must be played for camp or with a wink and a nod, but this is played really straight and plausibly, and you and everyone involved in this film suspend our disbelief so quickly. You are, I think, at the top of that pyramid of who has to carry that water, because we have to believe that this man back in time has killed Hitler and is going to be asked to do one more service for his government late in life. But most of the film, you are the man who killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot. Most of the film is about you and your character and the burden of action and the consequences of action. And it just seems to me when we first meet you in the film that I can't think of anyone else playing that role. You have one foot in the contemplative, the physical weight that you're carrying. We see that in your character. And as we slowly unroll the story of how you came to this point in life, we understand more the burden you've been carrying. But then you're also called into action at some point in the film. And it's completely plausible that you still have that in you, that vibrancy. To
however big of a stretch it was, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I think after 50 years in the business and after doing all that physical stuff that I've been fortunate enough to do, it's a bit of a stretch reality.
I don't know.
I very much appreciate you thinking that we pulled it off.
Oh, you more than pulled it off. It is a wonderful script, and it is a script that delights over and over again in its nuances. I guess when you first read it, you know, when I've seen the film several times now in different iterations, but I know it was a long gestating project for this writer and director.
12 years, I believe.
And you can see it every time I see the film, that there's depth to every single scene in it, which is missing from a lot of contemporary cinema. Mm-hmm. You know, most of today's cinema, they tell a tale, they explain everything, you get it, and you walk out the door. This film sticks with you. Your character sticks with me. Is that something that's apparent right in the get-go in the script, or that you have to have a relationship?
I think that's what you hope for. I think that's what happens when you get there, when it starts to unfold and you get to put it on film. It certainly comes from the material. I mean, everything blooms from the material for me. And I believed early on that if I wanted longevity, that material was all important in how I presented myself to the movie-going audience. I never was motivated to work for money. It wasn't about money. I was always, I think because of the way I was raised, I saved my money. I never lived above my means. I've lived out in Malibu for 40 years. I'm way too lazy to drive to town and get involved in the Hollywood game.
Right.
I'm blessed to be married to my wife, Catherine, and she feels the same way about the Hollywood game. And you know,
Catherine Ross, we
Catherine
should mention.
Catherine Ross.
Great actress.
Yep. Yes, she is. So, yeah, I've kind of lost track. That's what happens when you mention your wife. It just, you know, immediately.
You get Google eyes, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think I had a crush on her in the 70s.
I think we all did.
Yeah. And you two actually appear in the same film, strangely, but I understand. And that was Butch Cassidy in The Sundance Kid, one of your very earliest roles.
I was under contract to Fox, and that's the only reason that my name is listed on the credits, is that I was under contract to the studio. My character's name was Card Player Number Two. I think it's the last, next to the last name in the role at the end.
So you never got close to her.
I was literally a shadow on the wall.
Right.
And the closest I got to Catherine was seeing her coming in and out of the commissary every day. And I snuck in and watched them film for the 3 weeks that they were there at Fox before they took off for parts unknown down in Mexico.
You mentioned early on in your career that you were really looking for quality scripts and not fame and fortune, and just wanted to do good work. Mm-hmm. And obviously now, 50 years on, can you believe you pulled that off? Did you ever consider that?
I think I've had good
that?
Fortune. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that I'm sitting here talking to you.
That's
with
my
Robert
good fortune.
Across the table looking at the floor for whatever reason. And sitting at in the middle of this UTEP campus and feeling like I'm kind of come home a little bit. The fact that I'm still at it after 50 years, I think whether I pulled it off or not, I'm not sure I would phrase it that way, but I think I've really had good fortune that's come my way, and I'm still lucky to be at it.
Well, this current film, The Man Who Killed Hitler and then The Bigfoot, and interestingly enough, your previous film from last year, The Hero, are you playing two characters
they're similar in
who are
some
looking
ways.
Back on a life lived and with regrets and some fond memories, but also a lot of burdens, and you find yourself at this stage in your life, your personal
life? I
think
so. I think there's a lot of truth in where Barr finds himself in this film and where Sam finds himself in this film, or where the character in The Hero found himself. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of reflection going on. There's a lot of angst about what got by or decisions made and, you know.
Things you got to let go of.
I think anybody that says, I wouldn't change anything. I mean, I never believe anybody that says,
no,
I've led the perfect life. Every decision I've made has been right and I wouldn't change a thing. I think if anybody really believes that, they're really a lucky individual. But I don't think I have regrets. I think Barr had deep regrets.
Clearly.
Not only killing, but losing. Losing the love of his life because he went off to war and, you know, and then lost her while she was gone and while he was gone. And You know, and I think maybe she was as wounded heart-wise as Barr was, because she died at her. There's no explanation as to what took her or why she died, but I like to think that's what it is. That's kind of where I was on it. I never worked with Caitlin, the character, the gal that played the part, but...
Caitlin Fitzgerald.
Yep.
Aidan Turner, we should mention, plays your younger self in this film, flashback.
Yeah.
And the film is set in the 80s, so your character is now 40-some-odd years on from...
Yeah, that was one of the things I remember reading the script, all the physical stuff. When I first looked at it, I just said, there's no way, the math didn't make sense, you know.
I don't know. It makes sense to me.
And then I talked to Robert, and he says, oh, no, it's going to be set in the 80s. And, okay.
You're not going to be 103.
Right.
I want to back up a little bit. You know, early in your career, you came into making pictures in the late 60s and television into the 70s, and a lot of Westerns at that time. And I think a lot of listeners hearing your voice will immediately see images of you in a hat or... on a horse, or you've not primarily been a Western actor, but a lot of your major roles play on that Western motif and that persona. Just curious, growing up, were you into Westerns? Did you see yourself?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I think Gary Cooper was my man.
There you go. Know?
I was a John Wayne fan, of course, but I never thought that John Wayne was a great actor. I just thought he was a great human being somehow, but that larger than
great
life character,
a
great
screen.
Presence surrounded by just brilliant other actors, you know, and some of who I had the good fortune of working with early on, and always directed by, or most often directed by, really, I mean, John Ford was the man that I looked to when I was a kid, whether it was How Green Was My Valley or whatever it was.
He was still making films just about the time you were getting into the industry. Did you ever hope to work with John Ford?
No, but I met John Ford on one of the first films. Actually, it was actually the first film I starred in. It was a picture called Cactus while we were shooting it. And it was released under the title of Molly and Lawless John, and it co-starred myself and Vera Miles. We shot it up in Santa Fe.
Vera Miles.
And in White Sands. And Ford had a great love of Vera Miles, as you might expect. And, you know, I'm from the days with the Searchers and whatever else they worked together on. And he came to visit one day. It's one of my favorite photographs that I have from the early days, is a picture of the three of us standing on the set.
How about that?
About that big, and he's got a patch on his eye.
Right?
It's just, it was incredible. It was incredible, and he said some nice comment about me that was put into my bio, that probably which no one ever believed. But
you know, was it how you walked
picture.
Or how you sat in a saddle?
Yeah, just about what kind of a guy I was. It was that.
You know, you seem, speaking with you right here, I can see a lot of you in your portrayals, and I wonder if people coming up to you think that you're the characters you portray. Or...
Yeah, I think that's a tendency for the audience to just assume that you're that character, you know.
Well, you have such an iconic look, too, that, you know, for a lot of actors...
As faded as it may be.
Right, but I think that you look back at your early career and you really haven't changed physically much. it's uncanny,
I think
really.
It's good genes, good genetics. My mom lived to be a week short of 97, and I was athletic most all of my life. You know, still manual labor is a big part of my life, and I've always been able to eat what I wanted to and get away with it. So.
A lot of people are hating you just about that. So what you're saying is it doesn't take anything to keep Sam Elliott looking like Sam Elliott.
Well, the old body doesn't move like it used to move. It's got a lot of aches and pains every morning. It takes a while to get those joints lubricated.
Yeah. Was there something, though, in those early years you think that something about your look, your persona, the way you were physically that lent itself and you got attached to so many Westerns?
I know that I always had a great fascination with Westerns, and I think between my fascination of it and my personal heritage that it just, it was automatic. And I ended up, for whatever reason, kind of having this Southwesty dialect. Mm-hmm. And I think it came from my mom, if she had it as well. I remember her telling me one time when she was teaching physical education up in Portland, Oregon, and she had to do some recording, and she talked about how much she hated her, the sound of her voice. She sounded like I sound like some hick. You know, but I think all of that lent itself. I always loved being around horses, and I really learned to ride best when I was in the film business, but I got on a number of horses before I even got to California. And there's a sensibility in the Western genre that always appealed to me, and I think it's really born in the simplicity of the form. Mm-hmm. Pretty clear delineation between good and evil. There wasn't a lot of gray hats, you know, they're black and white. And
I mentioned in the introduction sort of laconic performances, men who, not necessarily short on words, but are succinct. Mm-hmm. They say what they mean. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that has always drawn me to your performances is the way you deliver words and that resonant voice. It makes you pay attention to every word you say, whether you intend it or not. Or whether
because it's hard to understand what I'm saying.
Maybe that's the case. But
I feel the older I get, I see people like leaning in to like, to try to understand what I'm mumbling about.
Well, maybe that's an asset now.
Maybe.
We have to hang on every word.
Right.
But not only the characters are set up that way. I wonder if at some point you began getting scripts from writers who were specifically writing for you.
I don't think I ever had anybody write anything for me but Brett Haley. Mm-hmm. Specifically for me. I take that back. The part in The Big Lebowski was written for me.
Of course.
My name was in the script, so,
right.
You know.
Not a Sam Elliott type, but
no,
Sam Elliott.
It actually started in the voiceover, in a description of the voiceover, and the voice was sounding not unlike Sam Elliott. And then when the stranger walked into the bar and he saw him, here comes the stranger, looking not unlike Sam Elliott. So I guess they were optimistic that I was, you know, show up for that.
Well, those are great wordsmiths, too, the Coens.
Brilliant.
They know how to
weave
words together. When you were growing up, you mentioned that you did watch Westerns, but at what point did you think, you know,
I watched the worst Westerns on television that were made, you know, Roy Rogers and Gene Autry.
There were thousands
of those. I watched them
all,
and they were not very good.
Well, what
Hopalong
point
Cassidy.
As a kid, though, you were thinking, maybe I could do that. I could be an actor.
Nine. I recall. I've thought about that often. I used to go to a neighborhood cinema, the Sequoia Theater in Sacramento, and saw a lot of those, you know, two-reelers or, you know, one-reeler or whatever they were, those kind of serial films.
Right. Come back next week for the next chapter.
Yeah. And I had tunnel vision about it.
Huh.
And I started performing in grade school. Like in stage productions. My mom drugged me to sing in a cherub choir at the Congregational Church in Sacramento when I was 4 years old. Mm. And I always sang. And there was a time when I thought that's what I was going to do with my life.
You sang bass in that cherub choir?
Not at four, no. But it wasn't long after. I was in grade school when I started singing baritone. Hmm. And I had some great mentors in the music end of it through school, both in Sacramento and in Portland, Oregon. And I sang up through college as well. And I always had great teachers and people that encouraged me, and two of them particularly in high school. I really had tunnel vision about it. My dad thought I was a total idiot. He gave me the classic line one time, "Have you got a snowball's chance in hell of having a career in that town?" And my mom encouraged me from the get-go and was my greatest mentor forever.
If she was
sitting here today, I'd feel like I'd achieved everything I wanted to in my life.
Well, it is interesting then that we've come back to a campus and to a building that your mother may have been in.
Yeah.
To have this conversation.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott, it's been a delight to have you in the studio, and thank you for giving us so much time to just meander around your life and career and your talent.
Thank you, Charles. Like I said, I'm honored to be here.
My guest today has been veteran actor Sam Elliott. Elliott was in El Paso in August for the U.S. premiere of his new film, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot, and we were lucky enough to spend some extra time together in the studio. Our conversation wandered from his latest work to conversations about his career and approach to acting, enough to fill two programs. So you can tune in next week, and we'll continue my conversation with Sam Elliott. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. An archive of past programs is available online at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.